Good morning. May it please the court. Your Honors, my name is Jared Daly from Missoula, Montana. I am appearing for Ms. Burgoyne-Prohack-Vice with my co-counsel, Vitaly Kirchin. And I am here today.
Would you like to reserve time?
Oh, yes, thank you, Your Honor. 2 minutes, please. Your Honor, the trial judge, Judge Doyle, in December of 2015, committed reversible error when she granted the respondent's motion for summary judgment, in effect taking away, without the opportunity for discovery, without the opportunity to develop a case, by summary judgment, by saying that collateral estoppel applied to preclude the fundamentally distinct tort claims against the respondents, arguing that Judge Paree Callis's arbitration conclusions reached in December of 2014 precluded those claims. The reversible error was an error of law, and the facts that supported that position, according to Judge Doyle, are also challenged on appeals, Your Honor. The burden to prove collateral estoppel is on the party seeking its imposition. The respondents have the burden to establish the four elements under Washington law of collateral estoppel, which are identity of issues, a final judgment on the merits, and that the non-moving party was a party in the first action, and that the application does not work in injustice. Your Honor, in effect, what happened was is the trial judge improperly put the burden on Ms. Burgoyne to come forward with evidence without the opportunity to conduct any discovery on those fundamentally distinct claims that sounded in tort against the respondents versus the purely contract claims that emanated from Ms. Burgoyne's contract claim between her former husband and herself. Briefly, they had a PSA, a property settlement agreement, that was to govern for a time before the divorce, and then after the divorce, the financial arrangement between Mr. and Mrs. Burgoyne. Ms. Olson, Joyce Olson, was hired as the CPA to act as paymaster, to govern those financial arrangements, and to discharge what the PSA set forth was a series of priorities in the manner in which the finances were to be conducted. Under the PSA, Ms. Burgoyne had, until John reached age 65, one half of all of his income from his medical practice. Dr. Burgoyne is a successful ENT surgeon here in Seattle and earned a high income. The PSA was based on his average income of $800,000. So because there was a significant amount of money that was being administered, Ms. Olson was hired to do this. What happened then is that a conflict developed between Ms. Olson conducting these financial arrangements between the Burgoynes, because once they got divorced, it became clear that Mr. and Mrs. Burgoyne's interests were adverse. Ms. Burgoyne complained to the Washington State Board of Accountancy, and they concluded that there was a conflict of interest, and that was in the right at the time the arbitration in December of 2014 was happening. As as the facts developed, the director of the Washington Board of Accountancy, Charles Sweeney, had stated to Ms. Olson in August of 2014 to step down as the paymaster, which she did as of September 1st of 2014. So what happened in the summary judgment proceeding in the lower court was that the judge applied collateral estoppel, saying that these contract claims under the PSA basically precluded the tort claims against the respondents. And that is a fundamentally error of law, and the facts supporting that are also in error. The argument that was made below was that there was simply not enough money to provide for these priorities to be met. Judge Perry Callis, we pointed out in our briefing, Your Honors, stated that there was, in fact, evidence contrary to that, to suggest that Dr. Burgoyne's income was actually going up at the time. So we believe that there is a question of fact with regard to that issue, which really formed the fundamental basis, I think.
Could I just ask you,
yes.
if the tort claim that you're alleging derives from the conflict of interest, is that right? That's the breach of duty?
Part of it, yes, Your Honor.
Because setting aside collateral estoppel, it seems as though Judge Callis determined that based on, I think there was an expert who was brought in that said that Ms. Olson did everything right, that her sums, you know, her accounting was correct.
That was Mr. Grambush, yes.
So what's the causation? What evidence supports causation?
The problem with that, Your Honor, is that, first of all, Ms. Burgoyne was not allowed to ask Mr. Grambush all of the questions that she had for him. Judge Callis limited the scope of the questions that could be asked. And importantly, Mr. Grambush did not have all of the information before him. It's the problem with his opinions being based on limited or insufficient information. He basically addressed the question, was there bad faith?
Is there a CR 56F motion then to continue so that she could get more information?
Your Honor, there was not a 56F motion made for that.
Wouldn't that have been the thing to do if she felt like she needed more time to develop her causation evidence?
Well, perhaps that may have been something that could have been done, Your Honor. The decision was made not to do that at the time. But I would like to get back to Your Honor's question specifically about Mr. Grambush. He did not express any opinion as to Ms. Olson's responsibility as paymaster. So we never even reached the idea or the concept of causation. He did not express any opinion as to the manner in which she carried out her duties, including whether the quarterly taxes had been paid, which was the key reason she'd been hired in the first place. Ms. Burgoyne was dealing with a husband who had engaged in financial mismanagement without her knowledge, and hiring Ms. Olson was an attempt to get a handle on that, to keep transparency. And the number one priority of that PSA was to make sure those taxes were paid. And it doesn't make any sense, or at least certainly raises factual questions that need to be developed in the tort claims to be allowed to go forward, about what was going on. Why weren't those taxes being paid? Why wasn't it being made very clear that there wasn't enough money? And importantly, the PSA also has a certification requirement.
Well, why not indeed? But I mean, the thing is, it seems like summary judgment, that would have been the time to come forward with evidence of how she was damaged, about how the accounting was done wrong, and therefore she ended up with less money than she thought she should have had.
Well, Your Honor, they brought forth the idea that there wasn't any evidence of causation. I understand that she wouldn't be able to prove that. And that was really based on the idea that the case had already been decided and that the issues overlapped. And that, Your Honor, I don't think precludes a remand of this case to permit the case to go forward and allow those tort claims, which are fundamentally distinct from the contract claims, to go forward. Ms. Olson was not a party to the contract. She was not a party to the first action with Judge Callis. And these are fundamentally distinct issues that ought to be able to be developed on remand in discovery. And if that's the case, the trial judge there can deal with it. But it needs to be allowed to develop in the discovery process.
You'll have 2 minutes.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I'm Jeff Kessel. I represent the respondents in this case. So yes, one of the arguments that we made was that the plaintiffs had failed to establish causation and damages, and that's the question that you just raised, Your Honor. There is no evidence of causation or damages, and for that reason alone, on the three causes of action that were pled, the claims were properly dismissed. With respect to collateral estoppel,
Isn't there evidence of causation? Isn't there evidence that taxes were not timely paid, that as a result of not being timely paid, penalties were incurred, interest was incurred, so funds that otherwise would have been distributable to the parties were diverted to the IRS?
I don't believe that's in the record, Your Honor. I don't believe that's in the record.
I didn't divine it. The briefing raises it, and it's not in the record, perhaps? What? Taxes were not paid on time. Is that in dispute?
Certain taxes were not paid on time, correct, Your Honor.
That typically triggers expenses.
Yes, Your Honor.
It happened in this case? So there were consequences.
Okay, there were consequences. Yes, I agree with you, Your Honor.
So it's not a factual dispute. It's a fact, and so there were some financial issues.
Yes, there were financial issues. Agreed. I agree. Okay.
And there was also evidence that the wife received more money than she should have out of the division, I think, was $7,000. But do we know that that was more than what she should have received but for the failure to pay the taxes on time?
I don't think we know that, Your Honor.
Shouldn't we find that out?
Perhaps.
Because if we find that out, then we know whether or not there's causation, because we know there's misconduct.
Okay. Yes, I will concede that, Your Honor.
I guess the question is, whose misconduct? Aren't we focusing here on the conduct or alleged misconduct of Joyce Olson?
Correct.
The misconduct sounds like it may have been the misconduct of the parties, Mr. and
well, and I, and
Dr.
I think that,
Burgoyne and his wife, who
right,
apparently both spent more than they had.
Right, and I think that sort of folds into the collateral estoppel argument, where with respect to the taxes, Judge Callis determined both parties, with the advice of financial experts, made joint decisions about which tax payments to make and which not to make. And in addition, with respect to the argument that a delay in creating the tax account caused some sort of damage, Judge Callis determined that the delay in creating the tax account rather than that the lack of funds, there's no proof that the delay in creating the tax account rather than the lack of funds resulted in underpayment of the party's joint obligations. So with respect to the collateral estoppel arguments, what Judge Callis determined, there were three main arguments or three main points that were raised in the arbitration. One is whether or not the accounts were underfunded. One was whether or not there were federal tax issues. And one is whether or not the parties lost equity in their two properties because of failure to make the payments. Judge Callis, there's a chart at CP 266 through 267 that shows what arguments were made and determined by Judge Callis and which arguments are made in this case. Those arguments match up perfectly. So what Judge Callis determined was the issues were underfunding of the paymaster account, failure to establish a separate paymaster account and tax account, failure to pay taxes timely, whether tax delinquencies were a joint expense, whether taxes were properly calculated, whether the paymaster made proper disbursements to capital accounts, and whether the priority of payments under the PSA, what the priority of payments was, and that goes to the failure to pay the mortgage issue. With respect to, in these three broad categories again, the first is underfunding of the paymaster account. Judge Callis determined that the special master concluded there was no underfunding of the account by John. To the contrary, any underfunding was by Nancy. She also found that there is simply no evidence that John underfunded the paymaster account. With respect to federal taxes, I talked about this just a second ago, but both parties, with the advice of financial experts, made joint decisions about which payments to make and which not to make. With respect to lost equity in the real properties, Judge Callis determined that the record amply and repeatedly establishes that there is simply not enough money to make those payments. So with respect to the two issues with respect to collateral estoppel that we're arguing are identity of issues and whether or not there's injustice in applying collateral estoppel to this case. The parties agree on elements 2 and 3. With respect to identity of issues, under the Christensen case, The doctrine is intended to prevent retrial of one or more of the crucial issues or determinative facts determined in the previous litigation. And as that chart at 266 through 267 shows, all of the issues that are raised in this case were determined by Judge Callis in the underlying case. There's nothing new in this case. And further was...
Maybe you have cited one, and I just don't realize it, but is there a case that says that collateral estoppel can apply when the earlier case is a contract case and then the present case is a tort case?
I don't know a specific one that says contract versus tort, but again, the whole purpose behind it is to prevent relitigation of issues that have already been determined in another case. Although I can't cite you a case, the idea makes sense that Judge Callis determined these issues. These are the issues that are at issue in our case. They've been determined in a way that favors Ms. Olson, and so it should be applied. And then finally, with respect to the injustice prong, there's no injustice in applying collateral estoppel when the party opposing preclusion has had the opportunity to present her evidence and arguments on the issues to the finder of fact. And below, the plaintiff had that opportunity with Judge Callis. Judge Callis issued a lengthy and detailed opinion regarding the issues, and summary judgment should be affirmed in this case. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
What I didn't hear mentioned at all by counsel was that the PSA required that all distributions be certified, and that included certification that what was happening was correct. And Ms. Burgoyne relied on Ms. Olson to, number one, pay that tax obligation. And even if there was any communication that there wasn't enough money, there was nothing that Ms. Burgoyne ever knew that the other priorities were not being paid. And, Your Honor, to your question to counsel about contract versus tort, I also am not aware of a Washington case that says that. Washington case law, as I'm sure Your Honors are aware, interprets collateral estoppel in terms of legal bundles. And the legal bundles are separate and distinct here. It is a gross overstatement by counsel to say that every issue lines up perfectly from that case with Judge Callis to this case. Your Honor's questioning...
Well, the factual determinations do appear to line up entirely. The question is applying legal principles to those facts.
I agree with that, Your Honor. There is some overlap in terms of the factual basis, but the case law, I believe, says that even if the facts are the same, they have to be the identical legal issues, and we don't have identical issues here. Ms. Olson was not a party to the MAA, to the PSA, or to the Callis proceeding. These are fundamentally distinct issues. I want to speak briefly to the injustice component of applying collateral estoppel. There's tremendous injustice to Ms. Burgoyne. She did not have a full and complete opportunity to present all her claims in a lawsuit against her former husband, as opposed to one against this account. She is a upstanding citizen, professor, raised a wonderful family, and needs to have her day in court, Your Honors. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes our morning calendar. We'll be in recess.